Welcome to Psych Pearls podcast by Psychiatric Times. With thoughtful insights into the world of psychiatry, this podcast provides timely clinical commentary and practical cutting-edge pearls for you and your practice. We hope you enjoy it. My name is Paul Gleason, and my guest today is Dr. Omar Rita. Dr. Rita is a practicing psychiatrist in Providence Healthcare System in Portland, Oregon. He is a frequent contributor to Psychiatric Times, specializing in the subject of trauma. He's also an international medical graduate, or an IMG, and that's going to be the subject of our conversation today. Dr. Rita, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
Now, as I said, you practice psychiatry in Portland, but I understand that you grew up in Libya. So let's talk first about the path that brought you here. What first inspired you to go into medicine?
Well, thank you. So I was born in Benghazi, Libya. And when I was 6 years old, my 14-year-old sister, she lost her eyesight, and then very quickly she died of brain cancer. So just seeing the trauma that my family went through, how heartbroken my parents were, I was fantasizing to become a brain surgeon, actually, to make sure that I cure any kind of cancer and make sure that families don't go through this pain and trauma. I did very well in medical school, and then I found out every time I go to the operating room, I end up unconscious on the floor. So you
can
be a good brain surgeon, I guess, if you're always fainting.
Absolutely. But was that disappointing for you? I mean, you had this strong mission to become a brain surgeon. Did you feel disappointed when you kind of realized that maybe that wasn't the right thing for you to do?
I mean, I think psychiatry had been my dream and my passion all along. So when I did not end up going to, you know, neurosurgery, I was an emergency room physician first. And even in the ER, I was listening to people's stories and holding their hands and asking about their emotional needs. So I think psychiatry is the right call for me, and I love what I do.
Yeah, it sounds like no matter what you were doing, whether you were in the ER, you were always kind of practicing as a psychiatrist. Well, what kind of specific psychiatric training, or did you receive specific psychiatric training in Libya?
No, in Libya, I was not in psychiatry at all because of the cultural stigma. Whenever you voice that you want to specialize in mental health, there is lots of cultural baggage that comes with the field. So during our medical school, you get exposed to psychiatry for about 4 to 6 weeks. Just do a very quick rotation.
Why do you think there was stigma surrounding mental health issues in Libya?
I mean, you can also imagine the stigma that's prevalent in the U.S. There's lots of, cultural baggage that people think if you express your emotions, that's a sign of weakness on your part, or maybe you don't have enough connection with God, and people will just, you know, discriminate against their minds, which is completely against, you know, the traditions of the faith that's practiced in that country. People are actually encouraged by their faith and their, authentic traditions to express their emotions and talk about their feelings and seek help. But unfortunately, there is lots of baggage associated with it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that that's prevalent in Libya. I think that is unfortunately still prevalent here in the United States, a sense that those difficult feelings are not something to express, those traumas are not something to talk about. And how did you then end up in the United States?
So it's a long story, but the short version is I was in the emergency room just practicing as an ER physician, but I was doing lots of humanitarian activities, you know, visiting the families of those who died, you know, in prison, or those who are arrested by the, government, and just trying to take care of their psychosocial needs, lots of orphans and widows. And unfortunately, my name came up on the government wanted list. So I ended up leaving the country, like going on a boat, crossing the Mediterranean Sea to Europe.
Wow. Just backing up for a moment. Why do you think the government objected to doing something as seemingly innocuous as taking care of the mental needs of widows and orphans.
Yeah, I mean, some of these families, the husbands or the fathers, they ended up like raising against the Gaddafi regime. So I
mm-hmm.
was maybe viewed as somebody who sympathized with them and somebody maybe who's trying to take down the government, which was absolutely not my area. I only focused on humanitarian and psychosocial needs.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you had to cross the Mediterranean in a boat. That must have been pretty harrowing. After that, how did you end up in the U.S. after being in England?
Yeah, I mean, I stayed in England for a while as an asylum seeker because my refugee status was not granted. People did not believe that I was in imminent danger. So the judge denied my case because he said there was no physical torture on my body. And we know that, you know, when you go through trauma, there are invisible wounds and scars on your mind that people don't see. But I was about to be deported back to Libya, actually, because my case was declined. And then one of my friends introduced me to my wife, who was a resident of Colorado. She's from Libyan origin, but her family has been in the U.S. for many, many years.
Wow, I would think that having your name on a regime list would be enough, but evidently not. Well, I mean, obviously, I'm so glad you met your wife and made it over here. When you got over to the U.S., you know, how did you decide to enter an international medical graduate program?
Yeah, so I came to the United States only a few months after September 11. So being, you know, a young Arab and Muslim man, I was actually placed on another list, which is called the no-fly list, and people will, you know, question you every time you go to the airport. And that had impacted a little bit my actual application for residency. I was applying for residency programs from the minute I arrived in the U.S., but, you know, you have to adjust to a new culture, new language, and you have to pass the USMLE exam, which is a different, you know, exams in one. And eventually I ended up, you know, applying to only internal medicine and psychiatry and got accepted eventually in the year 2005 to the University of Tennessee, and I started residency there in Memphis.
Yes, and then how was the training you received at the IMG program sort of different from the training you'd already received in Libya?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, like when regardless of your background, even if you have, you know, tens of years of experience, even if you are, you know, a consultant or a senior attending in your home country, when you come to the U.S., you have to take the qualifying exam. So you have to basically start from scratch, and most likely there are people who you have more experience than, they are your seniors or your supervisors. So it was a challenge because they had lots of, you know, knowledge about the science that I was taught, but I was basically asked to repeat everything that I do. The only thing that I would say that was really wonderful about the U.S. system of education that's different than Libya, that you put your knowledge into application. So in Libya, it's mainly the theory. You just memorize textbooks, and when you come here, you really apply your knowledge and you focus on hands-on, which is some thing that has been a barrier for some of the international medical graduates. Yeah, whenever you apply for a residency program, they ask you for hands-on experience. And because you don't have that in your home country, and right now you cannot touch patients because you don't have the right paperwork, or you have not been accepted into a residency program yet, it is really challenging to get into a residency program as an international medical graduate. And we know that the use of language is very important. When I was going through my residency application, it was called the Foreign Medical Graduates, FMG. And then mm-hmm. we basically said that's really not a nice way to call people. They're foreigners or aliens, or they don't belong in this country. So eventually, I think the name was changed into IMG.
Yeah, and I was wondering, where did the other members of your IMG program come from, and, you know, what was it like to learn in such a sort of international environment?
Yeah, I mean, so when I went to the University of Tennessee, it's a regular program, so it's not
Ah.
like an IMG program per se. My understanding, the IMG program started way after I finished my residency. So I did my residency years back in between 2005 and 2009, but there was lots of cultural diversity at the University of Tennessee. So we have one resident from China, another one from Taiwan, and we have an African American, you know, born and raised in Memphis, and then myself. The program was very small, so four residents per year.
Yeah, and did you think that you and your cohort were treated differently than the traditional med students?
I mean, I did not really notice much discrimination from the program itself. I mean, maybe because of my accent and skin color and the way I practice my religion, you face, you know, discrimination and racism on everyday interaction, maybe with the people on the streets, and even, you know, I remember one or two, you know, encounters of people who will call you names even while you are wearing your white coat and going into the hospital. But the program itself, I would say it was quite supportive. The program director, Dr. David Allen, he was a Jewish, and I am a Muslim, and that was never a barrier. He really supported my application to finish not only the residency program, but also to do the Harvard program in refugee trauma. So I did master's degree while I'm doing my residency. And also he called immigration and applied for me to get my green card expedited so I can travel and I can see my family.
It sounds like the kind of small size of the program allowed the, you know, the faculty or administrators to really pay attention to you all as individuals.
That's correct. Yeah, I thought there is lots of investment in us as a humans, not only as machines.
Yeah. And kind of going off of that, you know, what do you think you got from your program that maybe you wouldn't have gotten from, you know, kind of the more traditional American med school program?
Yeah, I mean, I never been to a medical school in America. My understanding, it's 4 years, and then you go into internship and residency. In Libya, our medical school is 7 years. And then you go into 1 year of internship, and then that's it. There is no residency. Basically, you choose your specialty, and then you become an attending that way. So there is no postgraduate studies in Libya. There is a discussion about doing that now after the civil war in Libya and the Arab Spring, and so there is lots of changes in the educational system there. But I would say, you know, it was an advantage really to come and put everything that you know into action. So I really love how we sit down with patients and apply theory into, you know, clinical applications and hands-on and interactive discussions. And especially the field of psychiatry will give us lots of luxury to spend time with our clients and get to know them on an intimate level.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, you and your classmates putting what you were learning into practice, where did you and your classmates go after the program? Into clinical practice, into academic research? Where did everyone end up?
Yeah, my understanding, one of them ended up going to private practice in the state of Mississippi, and another one stayed in Memphis and did a mix of working in different hospitals. So he was working basically three jobs in one. Another colleague, I think the one from Taiwan, he ended up in San Francisco, and my wife told me I have only two options after Memphis, either Seattle or Portland. She just loved the Northwest. So I ended up joining the University of Oregon, the Oregon Health and Sciences University, for a number of years before joining the Providence Health System.
Very good. And do you think being part of this program has sort of made you practice medicine differently than you would have if you had taken a more traditional path?
I would say yes, given my unique interests. So when I came to Memphis in the year 2005, Hurricane Katrina just hit, So Hurricane Katrina, I think, was in August of 2005, and I started my residency in September. So I was quite interested and involved in disaster psychiatry. I became the resident representative for the state of Tennessee when it comes to disaster medicine. I got involved with the Harvard program in refugee trauma. I learned the basics of how to work with traumatized individuals, families, and communities. So for me, I think I had lots of advantage based on my unique area of interest and also my background as somebody who was an asylum seeker and refugee myself. I would say that's very different than if you just went through the traditional way of education.
Yeah, I should say so. You know, thinking a little bit about the whole field of psychiatry now, you know, what would you like your colleagues and peers to know about sort of IMG and other international programs like yours?
Yeah, I would say it would be really wonderful if there are less barriers for the international medical graduates to join the system quickly. I could have joined in 2003 or 2004, so there were 2 years that are wasted from my life because you know, I was going through like the cultural, you know, shock and trying to get adjusted and try to take care of my small family and find part-time job and stuff like that. So, you know, because some of us didn't have maybe the right paperwork. You have to have either a green card or be a citizen, which is very difficult. Some programs don't accept any kind of visa. Some programs will ask you to, you know, go from B1 to J1 or vice versa. Other programs, they will allow you to work maybe if you have a work permit. So there is lots of, you know, issues when it comes to the immigration system that are barriers. And also to make it easier, hopefully, for the international medical graduates to join a program without the requirement of you have to have a number of months as a hands-on experience. Because you cannot really have hands-on experience before you join a program. So it's almost a catch-22. Whenever you are accepted maybe into a program to shadow an attending or to do an externship, most of the residency programs don't approve of that. They don't recognize it. They say it has to be an internship and hands-on experience. If you are only following somebody and shadowing them without actually touching the patient and taking history and doing an exam, it does not count. So this has been really challenging. I had to leave my small family, leave very little children behind, leave my wife, and they have to stay with my in-laws so I can, you know, fly to Ohio or Philadelphia to do some kind of externship because very, very few programs offered it at the time.
Yeah, so it sounds like a major issue for the field and IMG programs is sort of figuring out how to build a smooth enough ramp into the programs rather than, you know, just having walls, walls to entry or barriers to entry, having a sort of kind of, as I said, a ramp instead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of walls. I always believe in bridges, and I think that will really make people transition smoother. And really, like, whenever you believe in someone, they will try harder to prove themselves and they will blossom. So don't take it as a barrier if somebody has a different skin color, different religion, or their name is very difficult to pronounce, or they don't have the specific paperwork, because eventually they are humans and most likely they are competent as somebody who graduated from an American medical school.
Yes, and now, you know, speaking out to those people, as we're closing the conversation now, I want to give you a chance to also give advice to those individuals out there who may be where you were years and years ago, considering an IMG program. You know, what kind of advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I still believe in America, and I still believe this is the land of opportunity. And I just don't want people to despair, because it's very easy to lose hope, especially if you have, you know, low Yosemite scores, or you don't have the right paperwork, or maybe there is a travel ban, you know, against your home country. Never despair. Take that as an opportunity to study harder, to get a higher test scores, and if you can maybe expedite your application for a green card, or if you know a program that offers an externship or internship or hands-on experience, just take the time to increase your chances, because the chances are slim as they are, but really the door will eventually open if you keep knocking on it.
And there is a lot of need inside that door. So I hope that those out there who are considering these programs will be inspired to keep trying and find the right one. And that's about all the time we have. But thank you, Dr. Rita, and thank all of you for listening to Psych Pearls. You can find more of our conversations on the Psychiatric Times website and on iTunes. If you do listen to us on iTunes, please remember to subscribe and rate and review us. But most importantly, Dr. Rita, thank you so much for sharing your story and your time.
Thank you, Paul. Such a pleasure.